the end of a century, ravaged by violence, a society of perfect order will arise. Criminals will be frozen and reprogrammed in cryogenic prisons.
The prisoners are ice cubes. Their criminal instincts are being reprogrammed as they sleep.
Aggression and deviant behavior will be totally eliminated.
He's a criminal the likes of which you have never seen. In a bad time, he was the worst.
I'm gonna love running this place.
But in the year 2032...
This morning, Simon Phoenix escaped from this cryo facility. We are, quite frankly, not equipped to deal with the situation.
Amidst a world of peace and calm...
We're police officers. We're not trained for this kind of violence.
How was the fiendish Simon Phoenix apprehended back in the 20th?
In the end, it took just one man. John Spartan.
You mean the Demolition Man?
The conditions of your parole are full reinstatement into the SAPD and immediate assignment to the apprehension of Simon Phoenix.
Two mortal enemies.
Just dropped in and say hi!
From another time.
Pass is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
Oh, hell.
Will be unleashed on a future that isn't big enough for the both of them. Sylvester Stallone. Wesley Snipes. Demolition Man.
The 1993 film featured a pretty interesting cast. Huge hit with the viewers at the time. And this science fiction film has taken on a new lease in life in recent years. Eager fans re-watching this epic were convinced that it predicted the future. Yeah. Viewers have noticed a whole host of eerie similarities between the futuristic pacifist utopia San Angeles, formerly Los Angeles, and the 2020s. Good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here. On a Thursday night, the edge of darkness, in so many respects, I think we're facing it. This film, Demolition Man, saw John Spartan and crime lord Simon Phoenix sentenced to frozen incarceration known as Cryo Prison. Been there since 1996. But 36 years later, in the year 2032, Phoenix was revived on parole, goes on a killing spree. The Spartan then teaming up with police officer Lenina, played by Sandra Bullock, to catch him. Eagle-eyed fans, my friends, have noticed a disease spreading in San Angeles. Bears more than one similarity to the COVID-19 pandemic, while its tech advancements were also quite accurate. From a lack of toilet paper to the use of video calls and no handshaking, we look at all the reasons that fans think Demolition Man predicted our future, their future. Today's tomorrow. Demolition Man saw the spread of a disease in San Angeles, which saw the fictional city ban all forms of physical contact to stop the spread. Instead of the traditional handshake, there was a scene which saw two characters instead do a contact-free high-five. The grinning pair enthusiastically go forward to high-five, but halt their hands before making contact, instead moving them around in a circle in the air. In another scene, Spartan attempts to shake someone's hand, but is warned by Lenina, "We're not used to physical contact greetings." The lack of physical contact eerily mirrored today's society, when public health experts urge people to stop shaking hands early on during the COVID-19 pandemic several years ago. And the guidance was given in an effort to combat the spread of the virus, and people instead began adopting elbow bumps as a polite greeting instead. Sound familiar? There was one scene in the movie which also saw Spartan hilariously question Lenina on why there was no toilet paper in the bathroom. He whispers in her ear, look, I don't know if you guys know it, but you're out of toilet paper. But after another character shares his confusion, Lenina confirms that they no longer have toilet paper, but instead use three seashells. Now laughing, Lenina tells her colleagues, they used handfuls of wadded paper back in the 20th. Well, toilet paper has not been eradicated from society, but viewers pointed out that it bore similarities to the toilet paper shortages amid the COVID crisis. Early on in the pandemic, people began panic buying toilet paper in bulk amid fears that supermarkets would run out during the lockdown, leaving shelves completely bare. A lot of that did take place. My wife and I purchased our toilet paper at Costco. We got the Costco brand. It's not as soft as one of the major brands, but it's more than soft enough. It doesn't clog up our toilet like the major brand did. And yet there was a time we were importing toilet paper from Mexico. The rolls were smaller than the rolls we get in the American market. Toilet paper. Other similarities. Demolition Man also introduced the use of video conferencing, used as a regular form of communication in San Angeles. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? One scene saw Dr. Raymond Costeau, played by Nigel Hawthorne, talking to a group of people at a board meeting, but was communicating with them through a video call. He was seen sitting at the head of the table where large gray computers were placed where the members of the meeting would normally sit. The computers turn around the room to follow Doctor as he speaks, with the participants' faces being shown on the screens. It also predicted the use of iPads and iPhones as Lenina was seen appearing in a video call on a silver tablet-like computer, hinting at the technological advancement to come. And though the film's version of video conferencing is slightly bulkier than real life, it eerily predicted the use of the technology in everyday communication. And during the COVID pandemic, businesses became reliant on video conferencing software, such as Zoom, to communicate with its employees. As staff were forced to work from home during lockdown, bosses instead turned to video calls as a way to still host team meetings and speak face-to-face with staff. My two granddaughters went to high school that way. Oh, that's right, they stopped going to high school. They stayed at home, participated on computers with the teacher, who maybe was at school or maybe the teacher was at home. In the film, doctor's appointments and school lessons were also hosted via video conferencing. Oh, that was during our pandemic. And yet the technology is still being very present in society today, is it not? Another technological advancement that proved very accurate was the introduction of self-driving cars in the film. Lenina was seen sitting in her self-driving police car as it navigated itself while she is on a video call to her colleagues. And though the introduction of such an invention might have seemed very futuristic at the time, it's now a concept not so far out of reach. My wife will sit there watching the television God knows how many hours a day. There's not a automobile manufacturer today that's not pushing electric cars? Google has led the way with self-driving cars after launching spin-off Waymo, which has been working on building self-driving minivans and testing out the vehicles. Waymo started working on autonomous vehicles back in 2009. They launched a trial of the technology in Phoenix, which has already been marred by attack on its vehicles. And yet, in real life, Elon Musk's company, Tesla, they've also built an array of self-driving vehicles with autopilot functions. Many have taken to the road. By the end of last year, Tesla had rolled out the full self-driving feature to over 285,000 people in North America. That, according to Tesla. And yet they've accounted for almost 70% of 329 crashes in which advanced driver assistance systems were involved, as well as a majority of fatalities and serious injuries associated with them. And though it might be years before the use of such cars are widespread, it's an invention that's been heavily invested into, tested out in recent years. Oh, and then there was Arnold. Arnold was a popular actor in this country in the 1990s, but Demolition Man successfully predicted his future political career. In a scene from the film, Spartan was seen riding in the car with Lenina when she reveals she'd been looking at some newsreels from the Schwarzenegger library, to which Spartan replied in his shock, "The Schwarzenegger library?" And Lenina confirms, "Yes, the Schwarzenegger presidential library. Wasn't he an actor when you..." And Spartan interrupted by saying, "Stop, he was president?" Lenina said, "Yes, even though he was not born in this country, his popularity at the time caused the 61st Amendment," which... But Spartan interrupted her again and said, "I don't want to know." Well, as we all know, Arnold had not become president of the United States. He did pursue a career in politics just a few years later in 2003. He served as the 38th governor of California between 2003 and 2011, had previously shared his desire to run for president. Arnold, an Austrian native, became a naturalized citizen in 1983 and said that he would have run against Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump if he could have. "If I'd been born in America," he said, "I would have run." That's what he said back in Adweek in 2016. "Because now, this is a very good time to get in the race," Schwarzenegger said. In the fictional futuristic society, a whole host of appliances from lights to cars use voice-activated technology. The residents were able to turn their lights on and off and work and an array of technology using only their voices, much like our own present-day society. And now, virtual assistant Siri and the Amazon Alexa both listen to voice commands before delivering audio responses for the user. They're just two flashy devices that use voice commands to function and are sure to be the first in a long line of such inventions. Demolition Man, 1993. How many comparisons do you remember? It's quite shocking. Demolition Man, Journey to the Future, but now is the future. We look at the past and remind ourselves. Or do we? Shocking. Unusual. Yesterday was an interesting program. For those of you who stayed with us, I thank you. Maggie listened throughout the hour. She was actually supposed to call me today. I told her any time after 11. And I finished up that program last night. Worked on a few things. And I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't sleep. I had something to eat. I went out for a while. My intent was to get a cup of coffee and something light. I had a surgical check this morning and to get ready for next week. No big deal. I'm just going in for a colonoscopy next week, but I still had to go in. They had to run some scans on me and all this business. But I got up to where I went and had a cup of coffee, and I was just so tired. I wanted to come home, go to sleep. And I came home, and I couldn't sleep. And I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't sleep. And I had to leave here by 6:15, 6:30 this morning. No, I'm sorry, 7:15 or 7:30. I needed to get gas for the car. I needed to get up to the radiology office. And I got there early. Didn't have to wait long. Check went very well. No pain, no problems, no nothing. But it's just something they have to go through to double check. And I got out of there and went and got something to eat finally. And that's when the day began. I went to one doctor, went to the radiology, got the test done, went to an eye doctor in the same building, and somehow they hadn't received the stupid referral yet. They finally called me later today and left a message. They got the referral, but I haven't had a chance to even call them back to make an appointment. Where did I go after that? I had to stop at a bank, pick up a check, do something else over the bank. Had to stop at another doctor's office to re-verify all the final procedures I have to go through for next week's in-and-out project. Finally got home. I've had exactly 1 hour's sleep in the last day and a half. I'm tired, but I'm getting through it. Oh, and when I sat and had the coffee last night, I was going through my YouTube on my phone, and a song came up. I don't know what made me want to watch it, but I did. It was a song that we included in the program yesterday. The South African group singing Nightbird's song. Maybe that's the reason I decided I had to go. It brought me back to tears. It was such a moving remembrance of Nightbird. The first email I got this morning is from Charles Dickens. When he awakes each morning, he goes to listen to the rebroadcast of the program. He got it. It moved him to tears as well. It's done the same thing to a good number of people. So yesterday's program, maybe to some degree today's program, is a little unusual. I don't generally open up with cuts from a film. But why not? Recently, my friend Charles was reading from The Apocalypse of John, the last book in the Christian Bible called Revelations. Incidentally, the word apocalypse means revelation, or that which is uncovered. The word apocalypse comes from the Greek word apokalypsis, which means to uncover, to reveal, lay bare, disclose, unveil, or in fact divulge. Of course, the preferred pop culture and the secondary meaning is universal or widespread destruction or disaster by the forces of evil. The Apocalypse of John was a compilation of his letters to the seven Roman provinces in Asia Minor, the area we now call Turkey. John was concerned that these fledgling churches would stray from the newly formed faith in Christ and succumb to Roman politics. Part one of the book contained moral admonitions. Part two is John's visions and allegories for failing to observe the warnings and the resulting upheaval. The final battle in part two of John's letters occurs in Megiddo, Israel. Krause speculates that our fatalistically biased memory of this tale jumps to the end and equates Armageddon, the battle of Megiddo, to Apocalypse. Now, while scholars' interpretations vary wildly, they generally accept that part two warns of ignoring part one. Well, the less obvious rationale for our gloomy view is that this compilation became a weapon classically used by the church to frighten, to control, to recruit believers. And like most biblical and historical interpretations, it's used to manage by fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD. FUD? Well, FUD is a propaganda tactic used in sales, in marketing, in public relations, in politics, in polling, and cults. FUD is generally a strategy to influence perception by disseminating negative and dubious or false information, and a manifestation of the appeal to fear. FUD. I wonder if his first name was Elmer. Ever thought of that? Well, Charles attributes this popular connotation of cataclysm and catastrophe to man's natural tendency toward fatalism and FUD. Oh, admittedly, John's writings in part two are ominous, yet their message is intended to convey the seriousness of his admonitions and visions. As an approach, FUD should raise an eyebrow or two. I mean, it describes America's government style from the beginning and is the basis for all governments. FUD described the future, didn't it? Maybe in real life, we're still facing the basis of Demolition Man. Mankind relentlessly selects, interprets, and co-opts information to suit his own purposes. We took John's letters to Asia Minor. We superimposed them over the Christian world writ large. And although the cautions are appropriate to all churches and Christians, the forewarning was intended for a specific audience. Fascinating insight into most texts is that they reveal a different message each time you read them, mainly depending on your recently acquired knowledge, your state of mind, or maybe your emotional state at the time you read them. Oh, you can define these epiphanies, apocalypses, as inspired or revealed, but they are more a factor of your openness to the information at that time in particular. I do not discount it being divine, since at least 48 biblical references support that God works in mysterious ways. Ask yourself, does it matter the source of enlightenment, or is the insight sufficient? Probity. Our source to selectively interpret and misconstrue John's letters is only one among many other convenient corruptions that Americans ignore and embrace. I mean, look at what we've done to our Declaration of Independence, to our Constitution, and how we battle over interpretations and language and word choices. Frankly, interpreting the language of 18th century authors or any pre-20th century writer using 21st century understanding is, well, it's rather quite ludicrous, is it not? Our lexicon is vastly different. So to appreciate the spirit of these documents. We must abandon our prejudices and embrace the concepts as expressed and intended. But we all recognize the Machiavellian phrase, the end justifies the means. It connotes that a desired result is so good or critical that any method, even if morally wrong, may be used to achieve it. And yet most Americans only know what we're told. But if you're an inquisitive, super cynic, like many of us, you acknowledge these calculated deceptions and begin pursuing facts. This level of investigation is not superficial, as Charles has written in many articles in the past. There's far more lies than truth. All are a matter of perspective. And that is the rub. Fact, my friends, is no longer categorical, but is based on the point of view, and in America's case, biased by political opportunism. A dilemma arises by blurring the lines between fact and fallacy. And this obscurity and variability of facts and their vagueness provides stimulating points for conversation, but often result in legal and moral ambiguities, questioning, challenging concepts of right and wrong. And of course, now there are degrees of good and evil, right, wrong, right? Suppose you accept what we see in the media is accurate. In this case, the only possible reply is an emphatic yes, based solely on the ends justifying the means. And that fuzzy decision process requires a mutable, multi-tiered system for what's allowable and permissible to support the assertion. Support the assertions spit out by big media. Suppose your ideology teaches right and wrong or absolutes based on the Ten Commandments or other religious moral texts. There is no kind of in these exact precepts. Either you did or you did not transgress. Hence, your answer must be a resolute no. What's the latitude on thou shalt not bear false witnesses? Are you saving someone's feelings, trying not to hurt them? Or are you lying to have your way? What about thou shalt not steal? Is the subtext, unless you're hungry and destitute or homeless. Who decides? Who's using what criteria? And then, of course, there's the thou shalt not kill. How do you rationalize this commandment? There must be some latitude on this one, since the Old Testament is replete with wars and the wrath of God, which sparks another interesting moral discussion. But then maybe this edict is the one exception to the rule and requires discussion. It would most certainly make for an interesting commentary, would it not? Who arbitrates? Who decides? Where can I find the right versus wrong? That scale that Big Brother uses? This dilemma is where the end justify the means becomes germane, disqualifying any controversy. Now consider this. Retiring President Dwight Eisenhower warned about the military-industrial complex, which was in league with Congress to perpetuate wars to maintain the cash flow and garner power. And yet there were wise leaders who saw the consortium for what it was, and Congress was added. But now we've got the military-industrial-congressional complex. M-I-C-C. Oh, they have become Big Brother. This consortium approbates that war was highly profitable and sound business, forging a symbiotic relationship. Congress allocates money for the government to purchase necessary weapons and support merchandise. Plus, the manufacturers would, in turn, sell them weapons, etc. The purveyors of said gold, goods, and services to the government would then return the favor to the politicians through contributions and... Yeah. Do you begin to see it all? Oh, let's not forget the bribes. Not just contributions. The military then has all the implements of mass destruction needed to wage the wars and save democracy in the process. Congress instigated and endorsed the use of military force in the very first place. QED symbiosis. You know, since America effectively maintains a two-party strategy, the MICC's scheme could inflame and kindle the president's passions to ensure continuing military actions elsewhere. Eisenhower warned us about all this in his farewell address in 1961. Oh, and were you aware of the fact that there's been 285 distinct global conflicts since 1946? Oh, you thought it was just the end of World War II and then Korea and then Vietnam. Oh, we went to, you know, Iraq for a couple of weeks. We were in Afghanistan for a couple of years. You think that's the end of it? Now we got our nose and our tax dollars totally embedded in the Ukraine-Russia fiasco. Unbelievable. And the impetus for this type of treachery is a time-honored motivator called sovereignty. This quest for supreme power and authority is a sufficient pretext to betray one's own country, especially since the end justifies the means. Also known as selling your soul to the devil. Oh, and just for your edification, America is not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. And yet there's no end to the references and failures of our democracy. Well, you need to understand the differences. Because if you don't appreciate them, well, maybe you should go look it up. You know, we choose representatives, my friends, who carry our messages, our concerns, and our desires to the federal government through Congress. They vote on our behalf about topics germane to our republic. These are the people that we choose to represent us. However, the day they take their oath of office, they're no longer partisan politicians. They speak for all of their constituents. For you and me, our wives, our children, our neighbors. In 1789, the first Congress adopted a simple oath that says, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States. And since then, they realized that this simplistic oath needed more specificity. The 1860s oath of office became more specific. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. And I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter, so help me God. I took that oath, or a very similar variation thereof, on November the 7th, 1965. In essence, what I've just shared with you, this oath that both Charles Dickens and I took many decades ago, and we still abide by said oath. You see, these elected representatives swear or affirm allegiance to the Republic's Constitution, not their respective political parties. That's the critical point of departure from the current partisan construct. The two main political parties have usurped power through the MICC. Because the construct of partisan politics is archaic and useless in our republic. Its only purpose was to identify the candidates' political affiliations and ideologies during the election cycle. But once the state-level elections are completed, political partisanship has served its purpose. And from this point forward, the representatives' only concern is their duty to all Americans, not just those in their respective parties, and to the Constitution of the United States of America. Everything else is counter to the original tenet of the Republic, especially political deference for financial support. Look at the insanity we've gone through with this last couple of weeks. It's just amazing to me. We'll never know the entire truth about all that's taken place with this battle to make sure we can cover our debts and pay our bills. You know, well, somebody's going to pay them. And it won't be them. It'll be us. Sell your soul to the devil. George Washington, in his farewell address, warned that parties were likely to, quote, become potent engines by which unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government. My friends, there are countless places to read our Constitution, and I highly recommend that you do so frequently, since this is one of the documents Americans love to misquote and to misrepresent to suit our immediate purposes. Oh, it's a favorite of politicians who prey on our ignorance of the foundational instrument. Every country has a guiding charter, and most are based loosely on our version, with a few caveats, ceding power to an oligarchy or a dictator, but rarely to the people. The current state of this country underscores that Congress, the opposite of progress, and our entire government violate their oath of office. You cannot sort of break that oath. There is no almost or sort of. Either you honor it or you break it. Specific legal provisions for violating the oath of office include removal from office, confinement, and fines. And since we primarily have a two-party cult system, and congressional members align with one of them instead of with the country they serve, who will prosecute them? Can one cult faction indict the other impartially and fairly? If there is prosecution for dereliction, it's frequently attributed to partisan acrimony rather than a legal transgression. Do you remember what President Washington's stated concerns about the two-party system? The leaders of our republic hurdled the Constitution from representing us to enforcing and dictating the direction of our republic. They were directly involved in every facet of our lives and affect controls to ensure their jurisdiction. They see their role as the country's guardians, like an older, more experienced sibling, only more controlling. In reality, my friends, they are what George Orwell described in his 1949 dystopian novel, 1984, as Big Brother. Big Brother is watching. And yet, we face bias. It is a particular tendency or trend, an inclination and feeling or opinion, especially one that is preconceived or unreasoned, originating from impulsively accepting a particular perspective without considering other alternatives. 90% of what we know emanates from one of six major companies, all members of the corporate media. They tell us what to think and foreordain our reactions by skillfully selecting and frequently crafting points that dovetail with their corporate political narrative, loosely defined and misrepresented as journalism. That you say because facts are now mutable. Mainstream media are the architects of reality, my friends. Everything we know comes through the connections controlled by their partners and allies. Big tech. America's mass introduction camps program. Their attendees are programmed not to think but to do. They're not leaders. They were programmed to be followers. And they're fed a steady diet of propaganda and prepared to regurgitate them on command, just like communal Pavlovian drones. They respond with crafted and metered factoids that support the narrative. Their bias is pre-programmed into the canned replies. The message tracks the narrative, and that end justifies the means? And in this past 50 years, the events that we've watched, those that have caused us to reconsider America's form of government. Intellectually, we know that America was founded as a republic, but my apocalypse indicates that we've strayed from that original design. Functionally, we've become nearly unrecognizable, undefinable. The best description we can find is an oligarchy. A form of government in which all power is vested in a few persons or a dominant class or a clique. Government by the few? Their implied claim is that they act in our best interest, but how would they know? They didn't ask. They just assumed. I find an enormous disconnect in attributing wisdom and insight based on net worth. Considering whom we look to as an example or for guidance, these are celebrities, primarily film and sports stars, whose claim to fame is good looks, play acting, or playing games at a professional level for gazillions of dollars. Listening to most of them is akin to a conversation with Kamala Harris or John Fetterman. And yet these are the people we trust for leadership and guidance. Oh, this billionaire class may be financially astute, but many have taken moral and legal shortcuts to garner their wealth. In whose interest are they acting? These people hire people to think for them. They trust immense fortunes to financial consultants with the appropriate credentials to manage their wealth. As for earthbound issues, they're country bumpkins just like us, just as susceptible to the scams than the nefarious bridge and snake oil salesmen. Who do they serve? Their replies are the people, of course, but the reality is that they serve the ones holding the purse strings. Our elected leadership enters service indebted to their party and their donors. Their indentured servitude continues as they climb the ladder of success. Their indebtedness thrives. The donors control matures until they are slaves of the cartel that elected them. Oh, and by the way, that's not you and I. We are merely the means to an end. Oh, my friends, we know who these actors serve. But the one exception that we note is that many of the people in the government are moral and right-minded people, just doing their jobs, following their leaders. But they are actually drones. And these drones are products of America's mass indoctrination camps that we term federal and state-sponsored public education. They were programmed not to think, but to do. They're not leaders. They were programmed to be followers. We have precisely what we created. Drones. That is Charlie's apocalypse. It's been a process, not a destination. Charles is still learning. We're all still learning, and we're smarting from the lesson that life teaches. And yet, Charles, like myself, we proudly wear the bumps, the bruises, the whip marks that I've earned over these past 60-some-odd-plus years. But I know that the beatings will continue until I learn what I need to know. Remember this. Life is a cruel teacher who gives you the test first and the lesson later. The teacher. The lesson. The teacher kills all of her students in the end. You have to give that serious thought. I'm not talking about the teacher you had in grade school or high school, etc., 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 or college, as it were. No. Life is the cruel teacher. Life kills all of her students in the end. Powerful words. I hope that Charles would like it tomorrow morning when he wakes up to listen to the broadcast. Rarely does he listen live. He's got other things going on in his life. He begins working at 4:30 in the morning. Too many cases, that's about the time of the day that I quit. But I didn't turn it down last night. Couldn't shut it down. The weekend's upon us. Maggie will be with us tomorrow night. I may try to give her a call if I've got enough in me to even talk. I'm worn out, folks. It's been a long, long, long couple of days. And I've concluded a lot. Got a lot of things done. I typically got a full list. I think there's only one thing. Two things on that list that I didn't complete. One is to have to go pick up my new glasses today. I just finally said enough is enough. And the other thing was making this appointment for the eyes. Well, I went in there, but they were too stupid. Well, I don't know if we've got the referral yet. I said, well, you must have, because you people have already contacted me to contact you.
Well, I don't know. Well, give us your number. We'll give you a call later.
Okay, great. Other than that, I've completed everything else today that I set out to do. There's much going on. If you're interested in following or sharing Charles' commentary, Americanos Apocalipsis, the American Apocalypse, it is posted on Federal Observer right now. And in just a few moments, after the clock turns whatever here in a little while, the comparisons, the commentaries on the film that we opened with, that will also air It will show up. It will be there. You can read it. Demolition Man, Journey to the Future. Or is it a journey to the past? No. We're in their future now. People writing Hollywood movies, how can they envision all this stuff happening? Some of the other postings we've got on Federal Observer, record-breaking border crossings include terrorist suspects. Superb new piece by Roger Angus. Education extremism is rising. America's way of life has been threatened. I can't cover it all every single day. What goes on today in public schools is not stupidity. It was planned that way by the messiahs of education. Isn't that interesting? Think about it. There's so much that we've covered in this past nearly an hour that commingles, interacts. Each subject all interacts. It shows the direction that this nation has gone and we the people have gone. And so willingly followed with the stupid television and the bogus news shows and programs that we watch. And we all go out there and buy cases of Bud Light. Oh, I'm not talking about the beer. We're actually going out buying cases of Bud Light. That's information. We're buying the bullshit. We're buying the song and dance. We're buying the nonsense that's being sold to us. That's Bud Light. Not a beer with some fruitcake on the can. Too many people have bought into that nonsense as well. Bought into it? My godfather, Kirkman Zimmerman Fisher. This is my personal godfather. Grew up, went to school with my mother and with Jean and with Mary Alice. They all knew each other. All people of my mother's age group. Kirk was what was known back then as queer. But we never referenced it. He was an amazing human being. When I chose to marry my wife 50-some-odd years ago, there's no way I would have excluded Kirk. He was one of my attendants at our wedding. An amazing human being. His partner was one of the most amazing attorneys in Chicago, in Illinois. Kirk was a very, very gifted designer. I can't think of the proper term. But it had to do with decorations, etc., etc., etc. Never thought about him being unusual. Just an amazing human being. But now, our children go to school. They're being told that, hey, you want to change sex? Come out with me. I'll get you fixed up. Don't tell your mommy and daddy. We live in a sick, twisted society today, my friends. It's time. Do we have the time? I don't know. Have a blessed weekend. Tune in to Mary, to Maggie Rose tomorrow. I'll, Lord willing, see you next Tuesday. And we'll see what happens from there. Thanks for joining me tonight without apology. I am Jeffrey Bennett.
These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. Dead skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do you think we have time? These are the days of the empty hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take all my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, there's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. Skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.